Hello, welcome to the podcast.
We use that, you know. We're not against pulling somebody else's welcome in.
Okay. And now.
You do your own.
One of my virtual assistants, she's been pushing me to help me with all my social media. She's like, we need to do a podcast.
You should, Joe. Like, you're obviously very good at it already.
I was like, maybe next year. I was like, we need to get through this year. Got so many conferences booked. So,
do you have a lot of conferences coming up?
Yeah, mainly for San Francisco and then back and then Minneapolis and then Chicago and then down to Florida. And
so where in Florida?
I think that's Miami or something. Who says that? I can't remember which one's which. I know NAPFA's in Philly and then Bowling Ward's out in San Francisco. Can't remember all. I have to look.
That's good.
It's good. Yeah, I'm not complaining. These are all great places, so.
You are listening to Wine and Dime, a podcast that combines two passions, wine and personal finance. Hosted by Amy Irvine, certified financial planner and owner of Irvine Wealth Planning Strategies, located in Corning, New York. And now, here's your host, Amy Irvine.
Well, welcome to the show. We're so glad to have somebody that has this background and expertise in college planning. It's for people that have listened to my podcast in the past, they know that one of my soapboxes is definitely student loans and the tragedy that I think this country is about to experience. And the next crisis, I think, is about to happen around student loans. And it's pretty scary to me as I'm talking to some of my clients and my clients' kids and some of their grandparents, even what's going on. But first, let's really talk about something fun.
Sure.
The planning side is very fun as well. But as you know, wine is one of my secondary passions to finance. And I understand you kind of like wine as well. So maybe share a little bit about your favorite wine and why you like it.
Yeah, I am definitely a wine fan. Most people probably don't know, but I'm from the hospitality industry. I used to chef restaurants.
I did not know that.
So I used to order all of our wine for the restaurants because I was a little bit of a control freak at that time. So definitely California Reds were a big part of that. But once we learned what the Willamette Valley was in Oregon, fell in love. And then as I've gone. I love Spanish Reds, and Cab Francs are kind of if you can find a good Cab Franc, you can really blow people's minds, because that's kind of a unique one. So.
It is, and New York State in particular actually has some really good Cab Francs coming out of that region. They've really figured out how to use that grape in that region, and the pepperiness of it just bursts in your mouth, and that's the excitement about it. What in the I always say this wrong. Willamette, right?
No. Willamette.
Willamette.
Damn it, Willamette.
There you go. Now I'll get it.
That's how I always remember it. Yeah.
What particular region are you, or what particular winery do you prefer out of that? Anyone in?
There's a lot of them that are good. I think any Pinot Noir really from Willamette Valley, it's just something about that region. It's hard to go wrong, which is kind of great. If I go to a restaurant and I just go down and I look for a Pinot, if that matches, I just find a Willamette Valley and it's usually going to be good.
Yeah, they have one of my...
And reasonable.
Price-wise.
Yeah.
They have a really good Chateau St. Michel, actually, considering a Washington wine, right? And I always bring them up because that's... I'm actually, I think, more partial to that region than I am the better-known Napa Valley region.
Yeah.
And the grapes that are used in that particular winery are from that area. Mm-hmm. So I started researching that a couple of years ago because I just love their Cab Sauvignon out of that region.
Oh, yeah.
And so my husband and I are actually planning a trip out there because he's a big beer brewer and hops man, I call him. And I'm the wine side. So I think we're just going to love that region.
Yeah.
We explore it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned the Sauvignon Blancs. There's a small winery called Shug.
Okay.
That's in Sonoma, and I kind of went in and I heard their reds were good, but the person was on the tour. He was like, "You've got to try their Sauvignon Blanc."
Oh, wow.
And I like whites, but I was like, "Ah." No. He's like, "Trust me." And it was, you find some of those little nuggets in like these small little vineyards, and I that's one of my favorite things about going to different wine countries.
So yeah, to get fun. What you don't expect out of that.
Exactly.
Region.
Yeah. Like I went there for the cab, but I left with the Sauvignon Blanc. Okay. Like it's kind of interesting.
I know for like New York State wines, you know, everybody thinks of us as the big reason capital. Like, you know, that's the big wine that comes out of it. And that's where all the awards tend to come from. But they really are starting to like you said, you'll get some nuggets out of it. So when you come to New York, we'll take you on a couple wine tours in our Finger Lakes.
I would love to do that.
You just have to be in the upstate part.
I got friends there in the Utica area and all around
perfect.
There.
Buffalo and Canandaigua, all that region. Yep. So sure. now that the listeners are palates are thirsty for the good stuff, we'll dive in a little bit. But I always say to people, you know, vineyards are very much like our lives, right? So it starts in the roots and what's in the soil and all the flavors that are around us, right? What are we influenced by? What are the grapevines influenced by? And so our lives are very much like that. And I can always bring anything in our lives back to that vineyard. what has been the nutrients that actually grows that vineyard? So your specialty, or you're known for in our network, the Extract Planting Network, you're known for college planting, and you're actually taking that outside of your practice and what you're doing, and you're teaching other advisors how to put a process in place to do good college planning. Mm-hmm. Prejudice, yes, I know, but good college planning. So how did you get from where you started? What does Joe's life look like, and how did you become that expert?
Yeah, I mean, I finished hospitality school, got into financial services pretty much right after, really natural fit, but I do have a finance degree too, but it was corporate finance, which they don't teach you anything about personal financial planning, by the way, if anybody doesn't know that, but got into it and worked for some large firms for a little under a decade, and then really saw the fiduciary fee-only model is the way we wanted to go, and I was in my early 30s at the time, and I kept, my friends were graduating from graduate school, MBAs and attorneys, and coming out and dental or whatever that was, and they were coming out and they would come to me and they'd say, hey, you're a financial advisor, what do I do with these student loans? I have $230,000. And I would be like, I have no idea. I've never been trained on this. They're like, but you're a financial advisor, and this is my concern, and it's big. And I was like, we've never been trained. So I started to ask around within my offices and where I was working in some of these larger firms, and I come to find out, nobody knew anything about it. We're never trained. There's no licensure. It's not even in the CFP curriculum to be a certified financial planner. So kind of took it upon myself because I wanted to figure this stuff out for some friends. And then kind of my epiphany was, instead of having people come to me when they already have the problem, I want to help prevent the problem.
Yeah.
So that was the genesis of college pre-approval, which is kind of what we run on.
The idea that, and I think the first time I heard you speak, the way that you explained it is, this is one of the biggest investments financially besides buying a house that people are going to make. And and you're leaving it in an 18-year-old's hands. And, the idea behind, we would never just go buy a house without getting a pre-approval on a mortgage. Why in the world would we ever go and get student loans or pay for something like as expensive as college without going through that same sort of, at least
theoretically.
Thank you.
Yeah.
process of saying, well, what are our options?
Yeah.
And I loved that analogy behind it because a lot of people can relate to the fact that, yes, I have to go get pre-approved for a mortgage. Maybe I should sit down and actually look at what the options are in paying for college. Mm-hmm. And yesterday at lunch, I loved the conversation that was coming up about, making decisions at the parental level and not leaving them to the children, the students, to make the decision at 18 years old. And then somebody else said, would you ever burden your children with a $50,000 or $100,000 loan if you could control it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you decided to go forward with the pre-college approval process, it was when you started your own practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of the marketing, I hate to use that word, but the marketing behind that process was, okay, we're going to start doing education seminars, we're going to start, talking to people about that, and that started growing the business, not only on the college side, but also on, the retirement side and everything else, but the students are also involved in this process.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about what you do when you go through that process.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I feel like a lot of people talk about the problems, that are out there and the student loan crisis and college is too expensive, but what we propose is a solution. You know, I've always been told by, you know, my parents and people that I've been brought up around, don't come with a problem unless you have a solution to propose. And I've always kind of taken that. And so that's kind of where, when we said, okay, how do we, when we began working with families, this wasn't fully mapped out, obviously, but now we say, you know, that process should be, we think in general, people shop for college wrong. They go shopping first without ever having a budget, you know? So I equate that to test driving Lamborghinis and that's a $500,000 car, right? So there's a reason I don't go drive those because I know I'll like them. So if you're 17 years old and you visit Vanderbilt or Duke or USC, you're going to fall in love because they're beautiful. And if you've done the work to get in, you feel like you've done your part. So if we haven't taken the time ahead of that to have a family conversation, have the college money talk with our students and let them know that the reason we're having this conversation is because we want you to have a good outcome from college, and being barren student loan debt is not a good outcome.
Yeah, right.
So because the money means nothing to a 17-year-old. What's $100,000? What's $300,000? Yeah. I go to college so I can make a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
So just contextualizing it. But again, if it starts with, if we can create a budget, it's a novel idea, create a budget for college and understand what a reasonable student loan amount is and understand that and walk your students through that, then go shopping for schools that are within that budget and find schools that maybe you're not even aware of, because there's thousands of schools and we all know like 30 or 40.
So, well, one of the things too that I think I really liked about the conversation that was taking place yesterday was the fact that when you think about the conversation that you just had, you know, that pre-shopping, you know, I love the analogy on the Lamborghini, by the way, but when you think about that process, you know, including the student in the conversation is super, super important, because, yeah, they of course, if they get accepted to a school that they really, really want to go to, what's their commitment?
Yeah.
Like, what are they, so here's the money that you kind of pre-approved in the budget process.
Yeah.
There's a gap here. What's your commitment to fill that gap? And putting some of the responsibility, we're asking them to be young adults, so let's take that to the next level and expect them to be young adults, right?
Yeah, it's a huge decision. I mean, and it's their decision. It's going to impact their future, you know, their ability to save for retirement or college or whatever. So,
but they're going into it knowing it,
right?
Not coming out of it going, oh my gosh, because so many people, and I know you've heard the same conversation, so many people will say, I didn't realize what that debt was going to look like. And
yes.
In reality, I didn't know what that monthly payment was going to be, because when they go through that coaching, quote unquote, air quotes, process for student loans, they tell you what the payment is going to be for that
piece.
Loan.
Yes.
They don't tell you that, oh, by the way, you have all these other loans, and it's projected that you're going to take all these other loans.
Yeah.
So here's what your payment is going to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, most people don't know how to even calculate that it's about approximately 1% per month of what the student loan is going to, you know, the outstanding loan is going to be. Well, if $300,000 in student loans, you're making the $3,000.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Good luck with that. You better
That's right.
You know,
better be called doctor. So
you're probably, and then some.
Yeah, because I was going to say, too, to go back to getting the student involved, like our first step, because people always ask, well, do we bring our student to this first meeting? Mm-hmm. And we fervently say no, because we need to get mom and dad on the same page first.
Gotcha.
Because mom and dad oftentimes come from a very different college experience themselves. So our first line of questioning is, you know, where did you go to school? How was it financed? Because if mom went to school and worked over 6 years, did part-time and waited tables, and that's how it should be. Whereas dad went 4 years, got it paid for, and had no debt. Those are very different places to come from and things that you want to expect. So we need to get mom and dad on the same page before we bring that student in, and then come from a conjoined front.
Yeah.
And I always say, I'm more than happy to be the bad cop.
Yeah, me too.
The third party. Yeah. Whatever you want me to say to them, because a teenager will hear it differently from me than they will from you, I'm happy to do that. So that's just kind of part of, you know, what we've learned to really help families create. Again, it's about an ideal outcome for a 22-year-old, seeing into the future. What's the loans? What's the loan payment if you do this?
And I think, I do agree with what you said about the idea of getting mom and dad on the same page, because when those experiences are different, or one got a scholarship, and yes, appreciated the fact that they got a scholarship, they may not really have understood the value of that scholarship. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're academically strong and sort of came easy to them, then they understand that it was beneficial, but they don't really feel it.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a big difference there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think the process from when we applied to school, most parents, it was 25 years ago.
Yeah.
You applied to one or two schools. If you applied to the state school, you just got in, and that was your backup. And you maybe applied to one other one, and that was it. And you did it on paper. Well, now it's all, you know, it's electronic, highly competitive. There's a lot more financially at stake. So just the whole process and. The biggest part about that is just giving yourself some runway. Begin to think about this when you have, well, as young as you can, start saving, but really freshman year, begin to get your arms around this process, because giving yourself runway and coaching, that's really, I think, one of the biggest things we can do.
Right. A lot of people wait till the junior year when they're starting to go visit colleges, and then it's like what you said, they're getting in the Lamborghini and trying to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And of course they want that versus, you know, the Honda Civic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Honda Civic is also a viable option for the first couple of years in a lot of cases, and it's often overlooked, or even the Hyundai is often overlooked.
Sure.
When it's really critical, when you're first getting out of college, it's much more critical who you graduated from, but they don't care what your first 2 years of school necessarily were.
Right. What's the paper say?
They look at that. And I also loved the conversation as a little bit of a side note, but I think it's part of that college pre-approval process. Not everybody is meant to go to college. There are some really good technical schools that are out there that we need those people.
100%.
I think there's this belief that if you don't go to college, you're not educated. And yet, when was the last time you called a plumber and paid, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're dishing out the bucks. They're important. Mm-hmm. Or an electrician. Or, you know, my husband is in the trades. And I forget sometimes how lucky I am that he has the ability to do, like, oh, this thing needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
You know, but if I had to pay for that...
Yeah.
It would be big bucks. So I'm pretty fortunate, you know, and I am every once in a while reminded how fortunate I am that he has that skill set.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody else is getting a quote and they're like, oh, it's $10,000 to replace a roof.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking labor, you know, I'm just thinking materials. Yeah. I'm not thinking labor, but that's really, really critical. And having that conversation ahead of time.
Yeah, I think it's taking some of the stigmas away from it. I mean, even to take it a step further, like the career centers that exist in your high school, the experiences these kids are able to have, I mean, it's, at least in our area, what I see, I go to our career centers, we have a zoo school that you can go to your junior and senior year, and you can come out with college credits already applied, and you basically do an internship your senior year of high school at the Columbus Zoo, which is where Jack Hanna's from, which is one of the most famous zoos ever. So these kids, like, oh yeah, they're a career center kid. They're like, you know, I'm like, yeah, but they went to zoo school and they've got data science classes there. They've got biology research labs. So it's like, you know, is it that important to take that fifth Spanish class, or could you go and do data science? You know, and really, I mean, these are careers where people are coming out making $90,000 and they've already got a year of college in because they're sitting in a college classroom.
Right.
I mean, these are the kind of things that are happening where, if we want to talk about cost, and just, you got to really just explore all your options as a parent to say, you know, in 9th, 10th grade, don't rule those things out just because you have this stigma in your mind. If your kid's really interested in these certain things, I know, like, a lot of these great public systems, they've got some really cool stuff going on.
Yeah. So your passion behind it is, I'm sitting here watching you, which is unusual because normally I don't get the opportunity to actually sit across from the person. It's usually through an online recording, and I'm watching the passion and I'm thinking, yes, you know, but it's getting it out there ahead of time and saying to people, reaching out at that freshman level, even letting the schools, you know,
see what they have first.
Yeah.
You know, really connect with your schools. And sometimes you have to let them know that, you know, we're interested, and you have to get engaged because they do what they can. But the reality is most counselors, they have 400 plus students and they're dealing with IEPs and like all these different things for students. And college is important. Some schools have applied resources, but a lot of them, you have to really ask for the help. And they've got resources in a lot of our school districts. You just have to ask.
But, right. So you have to be the squeaky wheel kind of. I mean, you have to make sure that you're the one that's in there having those conversations with the counselors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we, in our area of upstate New York, we're in a pretty rural area. Some of the school districts have a more reasonable headcount, but it's still like 200 some students.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's still a lot.
But the, you know, the bigger high schools, it's 400, you know, students that they're having to deal with. And unless you're specifically asking those questions, as long as yeah. you're doing well and you're kind of, you know, chugging along,
yeah.
you know, they're just not going to. And the aptitude test, I always joke with people and say, when I took, because, you know, being in my late 40s, when I took the aptitude test, it really is very different than it is now,
yeah.
right? So, and you have some great resources out in Columbus that are, we haven't developed yet in our areas, but it told me I should be a teacher or a nurse.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
not going to do bodily functions. That's not going to happen. So that's ruled out.
Yeah.
And teaching didn't appeal to me in the mindset that I was thinking. Like, mm-hmm. you know, your traditional education teacher, I totally get why
yeah.
now that was a skill set that I was suited for,
yeah.
but not in that
traditional
way.
Yeah.
And so probably if I had had that conversation today,
mm-hmm.
It would have been a much different outcome as far as like, you know, the direction. And it was, I attribute it to my mother. Like my mom said, well, you're good with numbers. Why don't you try accounting? And so I'm like, all right,
yeah,
I'll try accounting.
Yeah.
And thankfully that kind of pointed me in the right direction. But
yeah.
now, what do you see the biggest challenges when you're starting to first work with people? What's the, you know, everybody has differences, but what do you think the common denominator is for most people?
I think there's just, the people fear that they don't know the questions to ask. They haven't been through this process before. Oftentimes it's the first student of maybe two or three coming. And there's a lot of misconceptions. One of the ones I hear all the time was, well, we're not going to get any financial aid.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, financial aid comes in two forms, first of all. One is need-based, which is most of us think of it as, but the other is scholarships mm-hmm. for your merit of your student.
Mm-hmm.
And to teach them fundamentally, there are some schools that award only on need. They don't have merit scholarships. So let that sink in. They only award based on need, and they don't have merit scholarships. These are schools like all the Ivy Leagues, mm-hmm. Notre Dame, USC, Northwestern, don't have scholarships for academics. Those are all the schools that are at the top of a lot of people's mm-hmm. list. And if you're an affluent family that makes high income, mm-hmm. you'll pay full price there.
Mm-hmm.
So just helping them understand, but there are schools that are awesome for you that are going to give you significant discounts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a school like Tulane in New Orleans, their average scholarship is $20,000.
Wow.
So in their schools like that, that are smaller privates around, Case Western's in my backyard, their average scholarship's around 20 to 22,000. So the sticker price is 65, but nobody pays that.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding that the sticker price is irrelevant if you know how to shop and where to find schools that are going to give you a discount
mm-hmm.
if you're need-based or you're a scholarship search and
well,
you're not a need-based candidate.
So,
that's the biggest thing.
Right. So getting into the fact that you're listing on specific colleges that would be ideal, that's something that, you know, I think our team probably can help with some of the numbers around it, but knowing all of these schools that are out there, that's an area where I would say we're weak in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just because you have, like, how much time do you spend getting to know, you know, what schools are out there and where to go for these students?
Yeah.
And that's where I'm sure you're partnering up with folks like us, kind of, you know, working with us behind the scenes
mm-hmm.
On some of that stuff in
yeah.
a collaborative relationship, because I just, how do you get to know all that?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is like literally swinging the bat, like having a lot of at-bats and working with thousands of students. Like you just see a lot of families come through, and the partnerships we have with other college funding advisors, we can chip things away and say, hey, what did you see financial aid award-wise from, you know, Quinnipiac last year up in the Northeast? Because we're not, you know, you see a lot of the regional schools that are in your area,
mm-hmm.
but that's probably one that a lot of people in your area would be
right.
interested in is Quinnipiac.
Right.
So, you know, we know on average they meet 67% of the need of the family,
mm-hmm.
and their average non-need scholarship's around 22,000.
That's amazing, Joe. That's a huge benefit to people.
Yeah.
Like I said, I can work through the numbers. Like, I can get partway through the whole process
mm-hmm.
and sort of the budgeting side
sure.
of it.
Yeah.
But then
the shopping
part is
yeah.
it's challenging to,
yeah.
to have the... It, It's like anything when people say, oh, you're so successful. You're like, yeah, it took me.
Yeah.
This didn't happen
overnight,
overnight.
Success. Yeah, like 10,000 hours to mastery. I think exactly. It was a lot more than that, you know. So, but that is it. But I mean, the thing that we've been working on for the last year and a half that launches this week is College Aid Pro, which the idea of that is to take all of what's in my brain and my partner's brains mm-hmm. that have done thousands of families and put it into a software that has pre-approval baked in. Mm-hmm. It's going to help you understand what your expected family contribution is mm-hmm. for the family mm-hmm. at different types of schools, because they don't all use the same formula.
Right.
Something else parents don't know. And then compare and contrast the net cost of schools based on scholarship projection and need-based projections, all side by side within snap of a finger.
And then it goes out and actually looks at the different colleges that mm-hmm. would be good fits. So it actually extracts.
So we'll say, bring me your list of schools, and here they are. You know, if it's Quinnipiac, Binghamton, and for you, you know, a SUNY school in there, and you know, you look at some of those, and it'll show you, here's the cost of attendance there, here's what we think you might get in merit scholarship, and here's what you might get in need-based grants. And here's your out-of-pocket cost if you go here.
So this is something you guys are releasing this week, you said?
Yeah.
It's coming up. Is this at the conference?
It's at the conference.
So yeah. It's going to be...
We'll be in the exhibit booth, yep.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's what we've been working on because... And people ask, why do you give all this away? You have so much in your brain. I'm like, but we serve families. We add 20 to 30 families a year to our practice. Uh-huh. And we've got 20,000 kids in high school within 10 miles of my office.
Wow.
So, like, we just don't,
yeah,
we've got,
capacity.
Yeah, like, and we love our, you know, our family practice that we have in Ohio, and we serve a lot of great families, and we're going to continue to do that, but if we want to make a bigger impact and solve an end to student loan crisis one family at a time, we've got to put advisors in a position where they can help advise mm-hmm. and not have to know every school, right. but have a tool that can help them at least get an idea. You know, nothing's ever perfect in financial planning and projections, mm-hmm. but we can at least give people a realistic expectation of what they might expect.
I love that. So that's really important for those that are listening that are not financial advisors, which our audience is about 50-50. But, you know, I think when we're talking about the college planning process, so many people think that we're talking about the savings aspect of the process,
right.
and not the actual point where, okay, now I've saved, I've gone through the budget, now I'm at the point where I have to look at what's it look like on the other side. So before you even go, you have to look at it on the other side. What am mm-hmm. I going to come out?
Yeah.
And that piece for me and a lot of other financial advisors, that selection process has always been the part where I'm like, I'm sure there's other options out there that are better for you, colleges mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. would do the same exact thing for you and are just as prestigious. But I don't know what the answer is to that because
yeah.
there's how many thousands of
yeah,
colleges
thousands.
Out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say too, like our software helps, but the role of like an actual education consultant or the counselor at the high school,
yeah.
and we've got good relationships with some of the counselors at the high school, they're going to help find schools. We're going to help them figure out the finances yeah. that they may expect, because they may come back with this list of five schools. I'm like, yeah, based on the socioeconomics of this family, they're going to pay full price at all five of those schools, oh. and they can't afford it.
So let's
cast the net a little wider,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I always say, like, if you have a 32 ACT and a 3.75 GPA, paying tuition for college is optional if you're willing to consider options. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of schools that will give you a full ride.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you have to be willing to consider those options.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
if money's part of it. So, but like I said, the partnership, we always say we try and stay in our lane because there are people more trained on, you know, what's the right school and the right major and all those
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
So we partner with those folks instead of, we don't say we do it all.
Yeah.
Our software can facilitate it. You mm-hmm. can search by major, you can search by distance from home, you can do a lot of different things, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, getting out and kind of getting a consolidated list, casting the net a little wider,
mm-hmm.
understanding don't apply to all schools that only let in 3% of kids because
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
you have a 97% chance of not getting into any of them. Have some target schools, some safety schools, even though you're the valedictorian, everybody is.
Yeah.
You know, so just kind of those things that, you know, give yourself options and be willing to consider and cast the net a little wider is one of the things we start with.
Now, so let's talk about your process. Let's shift the
sure.
gear from
yeah.
When you were a kid, was this something that you experienced?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm very fortunate to have a father that, you know, helped me through this process.
That's great.
So I went to high school in Erie, Pennsylvania, and the state school was Penn State, mm-hmm. but I got into Brown and Cornell, and I played football, and I could have probably stepped in and played at Brown like the next year, because, but I instead, my dad kind of went through the finances. Penn State gave me good scholarship money, so it was very affordable for me to go, and was invited to do the walk-on camp for football. Mm-hmm. So from two sides, he said, one, this is much more affordable. Here's what we have and we can help you with, which honestly, in retrospect, it wasn't a lot, but it was a world to me at the time. But I was able to look at that and he said, you know, you can go here, but there's two things. One is it's a lot more affordable here, but two is Brown's smaller than your high school. Because I graduated with like 600 kids. Mm-hmm. He's like, it's small in your high school. He's like, and you're a big personality, you know? You were captain of the football team, president of the show choir. Mm-hmm. You were an athlete. Like, you had a lot of stuff going on. I don't know if you're going to do all that stuff.
Show choir.
Yeah.
So we have to end this city with this song.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of things. So, you know, he did kind of help me, you know, figure that out, that this is a great choice for you just academically, socially, and you can go try and play football if it works out great. If it doesn't, you're there on academic scholarship, not football scholarship. So
those are your roots. I mean, so that sort of planted the seed at that point in time.
Pragmatic thinking about
that. But so it was ingrained in you when you started doing the financial planning process. Not maybe to the certainly not to the degree that you've taken that, but that whole idea of look, this is here, right? So so dad included that in the conversation and educated you so that you knew what you were going to walk out with. Right? Yep. Now, younger than that, were you included in money conversations as well?
I don't think as much as I would have liked. I mean, I think I learned a lot about personal finance. I mean, it still wasn't, until the college thing came up, it wasn't anything, but I mean, we never wanted for anything, but my parents were always frugal. Mm-hmm. And I know now, I mean, my dad retired when he was 60. Mm-hmm. Like, he was smart, had three boys, they had us young, and they had us out of the house by the time they were 45, 46 years old. So I'm the youngest. So, you know, but I see now, but, you know, always drove a Honda, or, you know, never were flashy. So talked about, you know, when we see other cars, like just about being, you know, you don't need that. You don't need those new Nike shoes. There's probably other. So it was always like, you know, it wasn't that we didn't have any money, but they were definitely just, you know, those lessons of just like, you don't need to be flashy. You know, this will get the job done, but, you know, but take, you know, have nice treats once in a while, nice trips. Mm-hmm. It was more experiential.
Yep.
But experiential for me was like, you know, going to Yellowstone as a kid. I grew up in Nebraska when I was little, so like we did West Coast trips and that stuff. Like, in retrospect, my dad will laugh. He's like, yeah, that's because it cost us like $8. So, but it was awesome. But it was experiential. You know, like I remember that stuff more than anything. So.
And you have kids now, right?
I do not.
Oh, you
I have
no kids either. Okay.
No kids, but I'm the college guy. It's quite the yeah. So.
So you're the youngest of three. You said do you have nieces and nephews?
I do not.
Oh wow! So you're all.
Yeah, my mom hates us. All of us. I'm the youngest. Yeah.
Thankfully, my siblings had children.
Yeah.
Forgiven, I guess.
Yep. But yeah, that's it. It's kind of interesting, but as you keep working with people, it's just I love working with kids. I love seeing them help them make smart choices and. Because it's about their future, that we want to set them on the right path. So.
And do you find that many of your clients are starting to have money conversations earlier with their children? Or does it, I mean, certainly if you're starting with their freshman year, then they're starting to have money conversations with them. But have they had money conversations before that?
I think a lot of times when they come to us, this is the first time they've really had to do financial planning and get their arms around it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're usually in their late 40s, mid to late 40s. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them have saved well in their 401ks and they haven't put enough aside for college. Mm-hmm. And they know that and they come in and they're just like, but they just really don't know how to put it all together. Mm-hmm. So for them, really, a lot of times it's the first time where we're showing them more, not just strategy. Strategy would be like max out your 401k, but like tactically, what are other things we can do? Health savings accounts or Roth IRAs or 529, all these other things that they're really going, wow, I just learned a lot from going through the financial planning process. And goal based and all that. So.
Yeah. So.
So no, I don't think they're really having the conversations.
I loved what Alan said when he was talking about, you know, working with people that, you know, they've never said, "I started too soon on the financial."
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So when you're working with when you're working with folks that are in their 40s, I'm sure you're hearing that conversation of, geez, I wish I had kind of started this process earlier. One of the things that I think a lot of people do think is that if they don't have assets, quote unquote, that they don't need a financial advisor, or that, you know, financial advisors or financial planners really only do investment management.
Right.
And that's so completely not true.
Right.
When you're talking about the tactical side of things that you were just mentioning, taking a 25-year-old and talking to them about their employee benefits, and talking to them about any loans that they have left over, or buying a house or renting a house and saving for other goals, you know, that's perfect. Like, to me, when somebody says, well, what's your ideal client? I say, well, I'll tell you who I work with right now, but if I can get my grubby little hands on those 25-year-olds,
then I feel
like so excited to work with them, because they're just starting so early and they have, you know, they're so impressionable, and they're just going to end up in a better place. So do you think that by including the students in these conversations at the freshman year, that they're going to be coming out of college and understanding the importance of a financial advisor right off the bat?
I'd like to think so, because we do have more and more people that are asking us to have those, just, can you go through the benefits package? They just started at Liberty Mutual Insurance in the claims department, you know, or whatever. Like, and, you know, we're like, yeah, absolutely, we'll be happy to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and like, first thing I want you to do, 10% of your check, put in your 401k day one.
Mm-hmm.
We made sure you graduated with very little student loan debt.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the ability to do this. Mm-hmm. But no but. Mm-hmm. Start with the right habit. Before you even see check one, 10%, 401k.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the things that, because again, our clients, kids, most don't have a significant student loan debt, so they can afford this.
Right.
So yeah, we're seeing more and more of that, and it's we're happy to help, and we're, it's kind of a unintended consequence. We're seeing now, you know, our kids are now in their, our clients' kids are now in their mid to late 20s, and they're looking at, you know, starting families and buying houses. And so, yeah, we're getting those phone calls, and I was like, this is cool. You know, it's like, it's pretty cool. And then the other flip side of that is we're getting them involved, and then we're getting a lot of transition of wealth and dealing with, you know, long-term care and dementia and those types of things for their parents. So that, you know, our practice is evolving. We're still adding clients that are college bound, but we're just learning that we need to continue to add resources, you know, emotionally for those clients, and then for the younger clients, that financial planning, blocking and tackling for their kids so they get started right.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that strikes me about listening to you talk about that is, we were talking before we started recording about where we're both kind of taking our practices. And, you know, I've added some really young advisors to the practice. And I tend to call them planners, because I think there's a big difference between planning and advice, you know.
I think I'm going to adopt that, because, yeah, like we talked about it a little bit in the session this morning.
Yeah.
What's an advisor? Well, anybody can call themselves a financial advisor.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But a planner, I think, really is taking that step forward and actually, you know, getting the details on the paper and thinking proactively about what could come down the road. So I think as your practice starts to bring in those 20-year-olds, you know, having some relative age experience within that is going to be interesting to both of our practices. And, you know, that's one of the things that excites me right now, is that I'm bringing that next generation into the practice, and I know they're going to be able to work with those, that age group, and relate.
Because
I easily relate to the parents. Like, they're my age group, and I don't have children myself, but I have nieces and nephews, and I'm seeing my siblings go through it.
Yep.
To relate to a 25-year-old, I do theoretically relate to them in the sense of the numbers, but the other parts of it, I'm just not there anymore, unfortunately.
So. Yep.
So I appreciate all the time that you've taken today, but I do have a couple of, you know, final closing questions that I always like to ask all of my guests. So one of them is your definition of success.
It's always evolving, I'll say that. But I'd say for me right now, it's becoming more about, can we leave an impact? Can we leave something behind that really lives beyond, like, when I'm out of this business, can we actually make an impact both for our community and then also for the industry? As I've gone along, this industry's given me a ton. Our clients are great, but can we kind of leave an impact and kind of make that live beyond what we're doing? So,
just kind of goosebumps.
Yeah. So, you know, can we evolve change? Can we really create change? And this is an area where, for whatever reason, I've been given the hat. So I've kind of ran with it, and I'm happy to do it.
I'm so glad to hear that, because that is almost word for word exactly where I'm at. Mm. You know, wanting to bring that next group so that it's truly about planning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And not about selling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for you. And then the next to last question is more, I call it zen-y. And that is, what feeds your soul?
Feeds my soul is probably, well, it's definitely music. So yeah. I'm a music nut. I mean, I see music, I play music, I sing.
Are you in a band?
Not right now. We're on break since 99. We've been on break, but we might bring it back.
But who knows? The band is on break?
Yeah.
What was the name of your band?
There was one called Merlin Garden. That was a good one. That was a good one.
I love it.
Yep.
You want to leave us in a fun song?
Oh, boy. I don't know.
Mary had a little laugh.
Oh, no. Yeah, I don't know.
I think talents like that would be hysterical at closing events.
Yeah. I mean, in the great words of Bill Withers. Such a lovely day, lovely day, lovely day, lovely day, lovely day, lovely day, lovely day.
Now, you are going to be the only person that ever closes this podcast with a song. So that is so awesome. Thank you for sharing your talents with us. Is there something that you can share with us that you love to pair with your favorite wine as far as food goes?
Ooh, wow, that's a good one. I definitely like figs, Stilton cheese, with like a nice kind of, some kind of crack. Like, the cracker's got to be right. Like, if the cracker's wrong, it's all off.
Now, that's one I haven't heard either. Yeah. The cheeses and the fruit.
Fig, fig jam. But I feel like you can eat something that's good, like some kind of like flat pretzel or sometimes, yeah.
We'll have to explore that this evening.
Yeah, yes. I'll see you later.
Joe, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah.
And for bringing your talents in a world that so many people just need, you know, this coaching.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for all the work you're doing.
And that will about do it for this week's episode of Wine and Dime. You can visit Amy on the web at IrvineAdvise.com, or you can follow her on Twitter at Amy Irvine Advise, or on her Facebook page, Irvine Wealth Planning Strategies. If you have any questions, comments, or topics that you would like to hear about, feel free to contact us through Twitter or Facebook. We will do our best to answer your questions. We would love to hear from you. And thank you for listening.